as we noted earlier, Devin Nunes, chair of the House Intelligence Committee, announced today that he's temporarily stepping aside from the investigation into Russian election interference and possible Trump campaign collusion. Nunes, a Trump transition team member, has been accused of compromising the investigation by going to the White House grounds to review secret evidence we now know was provided to him by White House staffers, and then taking what he saw to the president, adding fodder to Trump's claim that he'd been wiretapped, even though the evidence did not show that. And just yesterday, the president told the New York Times that the Russia story is a hoax. There has been absolutely nothing coming out of that. Well, our next guest is a Trump critic, but is warning Trump's other detractors not to get too worked up about all this. Masha Gessen is a Russian-born New Yorker who's made a name for herself as a critic of both Trump and, before that, Russian President Putin. She wrote the 2012 Putin biography, The Man Without a Face. A year later, she left Russia when officials began talking about taking adopted children away from gay or lesbian parents such as herself. She's a contributing opinion writer for The New York Times. Her next book is titled The Future is History: How Totalitarianism Reclaimed Russia. Masha, welcome back.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Given that you aren't a fan of either Putin or Trump, you say that one of your concerns about what's happening now in America is that Trump's critics in particular may be going down some sort of paranoid rabbit hole in things like the investigation of Russian ties to the election. That might surprise people who might think that's the first thing you'd want Americans to figure out because you're no fan of Putin. Explain that.
Well, first of all, I think that reality is probably much messier than what we imagine. And what we imagine every time we engage in conspiracy thinking is something neat and simple that solves all of our problems, problems of the imagination and also problems of our life, right? And and the thing about this conspiracy theory about the Russian interference in the election is that the way we imagine it, right, it solves both the past, which is how we got Trump, and the future, which is how we get rid of Trump.
Because there'll be impeachment, surely, if there was collusion. I mean, let's be clear. There are two separate things here. U.S. intelligence officers are pretty much are concluding that there was Russian interference. Whether or not it had anything to do with the outcome, no one has said. And the question is whether there's been collusion. You're saying these are all the wrong questions because it makes us feel as if we answer them, then it's all over.
Exactly. And in fact, you know, even if we find out that there was an actual measurable impact on the outcome of the election, which is virtually impossible to prove, right? Yeah. Even if we find out that there was active collusion between the campaign and Russia, which is extremely unlikely to be established definitively, even that is not going to take care of the simple problem that Americans elected Trump. Right? I mean, the current intelligence theory as to how Russia ultimately influenced the outcome of the election was that Russia did it through open sources, through using RT, the television network, and other media as propaganda tools. That may be disgusting, but it's not illegal.
Well, and this is part of what you say when you say open, that Americans might be too busy looking at the secretive when, in fact, right in front of their faces are things right out in the open that they should be looking at. Like what?
That, I think, is the key problem, is that Trump poses an actual threat to politics as it is constituted in the United States. He actually poses a threat to our ability to act meaningfully in the political space. To give you an example, you know, there was a moment last week when Senate hearings on the Trump's Supreme Court nominee were like the number 4 or 5 news story of the day. That's not normal, right? And that is actual sort of measurable damage to public politics.
Well, you talk about right out in the open as a Secretary of State who came to his job with no relevant experience. Now helms the decimated State Department because of the cuts there. So you're saying, you know, focus on that. Look, and as we have said repeatedly, Trump voters are on the completely other side. They're saying this man was elected and now he's being prevented from doing his job because of investigations and being stymied with some of his appointments. You know, we know how that debate unfolds here. But let's get to some of the other things that concern you. You also talk about how what used to be considered impossible is so quickly becoming normal.
Right. I think that's actually one of the reasons that we're engaging in conspiracy thinking, because I think conspiracy thinking happens when the unimaginable happens. And so we'll look for a reasonable explanation for facing the unimaginable. You know, it wasn't imaginable just a few months ago that that Trump would build the wall. I remember shortly after the election, people were debating how seriously we should be taking his claims, which is a valid question, right? This is a man who lies all the time. So how do we actually figure out what to listen to and what to listen for?
And I just want to jump in to say that at NPR, we are not categorizing the president's words as lies, because the definition of the very definition of lies is intent. Somebody intended to tell an untruth, and we don't know what's going on in his head and whether or not he's being fed false information when he falsely says, for instance, that people boarded buses and went to New Hampshire to vote. So we are not categorizing them as lies, but they're certainly not true.
Am I allowed to?
Yes, you are. They're okay. Certainly not true. But your point is that it sort of snowballed and suddenly we're looking at mock-ups of the wall.
Exactly. And that's almost not news anymore, right? I mean, you actually have to do some Googling in order to find out what's going on with the wall. It's not on the front pages.
Are you looking at this from a uniquely Russian point of view? This idea of something being unimaginable and then, oh, there you are.
I don't think I'm looking at it from a uniquely Russian point of view, but I do think that my Russian experience has been peculiarly useful in trying to wrap my mind around what's happening here, partly because I've spent much of my professional life thinking about issues of autocracy and collaboration and moral choice, but also about imagination. Because one of the reasons I've been so obsessed with the issue of imagination is because I've thought and written a lot about how people have handled something in history that is unimaginable, which is Stalin's terror, right? And how that seems to always lend itself to both conspiracy thinking and sense-making and, weirdly, exaggeration, right? Because once you have sort of acknowledged something once, it stops being unimaginable. And so in order to convey the unimaginable quality, you have to resort to hyperbole. You can't just stop at saying, this is unimaginable and shocking, and I can't make sense of it.
You have a caution for people on the left in America that while they're so critical of what they saw as fake news coming from the extreme right, that they're doing it themselves. You offer an example of, you know, conspiracy theories that were floating around, all the Russians who've recently died, and these theories linked them to the investigation of Russia in the elections. What would you say to the left about why that's happening and what they should know?
Well, it's classic conspiracy thinking in the sense that it's not entirely baseless, but people who know very little about Russia have jumped on the bandwagon and tied together deaths that are not at all related to anything.
Yeah. What do you make of the stories of people, some with direct ties to Donald Trump, like now ex-advisor Carter Page, Eric Prince from Blackwater, meeting with Russians, these reports that are surfacing? I mean, as you watch this as a Russian, do you think they're being played by Putin?
Well, first of all, as someone who's covered Russia for a quarter century, I'm not surprised. The Russian modus operandi, and before it, the Soviet modus operandi, was to cast a wide recruiting net to try to go after people whose ambitions exceeded their abilities, to try to go after people who are greedy, to try to capture outliers. It so happens that Trump's campaign was almost by accident constituted in a similar principle. Right? Trump's campaign sort of drew outliers from political circles. Even someone like Jeff Sessions, who's probably one of the most establishment people in the campaign, was, for a senator, an outlier. So there's a confluence here. For that reason, you know, I don't think that an investigation into possible links of the campaign to Russia is baseless. The investigation should be happening. We just shouldn't be obsessed with it, and we shouldn't be pinning all our hopes on it.
Masha Gessen, author of the Putin biography, The Man Without a Face. She's also a contributing opinion writer for The New York Times. Her latest piece, The Truth is Not a Toy. Masha, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.